raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. 8 to 4. All right, folks, we are back with another edition of the Red and White Podcast. I'm your host, Evan, here with Will. It is Louisville game week, blackout game, glow-in-the-dark numbers. It's probably the coolest thing I've ever seen from NC State actually doing something unique. Like that, if those are really glow-in-the-dark and they turn out the lights, that's going to be pretty dope. So hopefully that is true. But Will, how are you doing?
I am great. I'm a true fan. I'm going to be wearing black while sitting at home, watching the game. Very excited.
I'm wearing black right now. Does that count?
I think it does.
I love all the fan shaming for folks just assuming people aren't going to wear black. Some nonsense.
I have not heard anyone say, we're the Red and White State or anything like that this week.
No, so. I've only heard it from certain Twitter folks who are just assuming people are going to complain about it. I'm like, whatever. It always works out. It's always cool. The blackouts are fun. I think the atmosphere is a big part of why our Louisville guest, you know, feels uncomfortable about this game, because Friday night in Carter-Finley, that place should be rocking. It should be a great atmosphere. And it should give State a puncher's chance in this game. And State comes in as a 3.5-point dog to Louisville, home dog. So, you know, the home field, they account for 3. So, you know, Vegas thinks Louisville's a 6-point or touchdown favorite on a neutral field. It's going to be interesting. You know, I talked to Jeremy from Carter Chronicle, Card Sports Zone, sorry. And I've came up with 2 takeaways, and you tell me if I'm crazy or not. I think offensively or defensively, my biggest concern is Louisville's big play potential and how the inexperienced safeties are going to impact that, and how Tony Gibson's aggressive nature is going to put additional pressure on our safeties to not make a mistake. Because if you make a mistake, Louisville's going to score on you. Jamari Thrash, their little wide receiver, is lightning fast, and Jahar Jordan is, you know, he can take a top off of defense too. He's the explosive running back we've wished we've had it for a while. So that is my concern on that side of the ball. On the other side of the ball, State is going to, I don't think the right way to word this, but, you know, play their short passing game, sideline to sideline, which we've been doing a lot lately. And I think that actually gives us an advantage against Louisville's inexperienced linebackers. I think that's where State's going to have to win, be able to sustain drives and score, but also doing it that way. Like, I don't think they're going to win a power game trying to run, you know, up the middle and whatnot. And if State's got a chance, if they can keep them in front of them on defense, but also on offense, exploit the freshman linebackers from Louisville. I don't know. I feel like we got a chance. Am I crazy?
Yeah, I was just watching first off, the 2 neutral site games that they've played this year, Georgia Tech and Louisville, they won by 5 and 7 points. And frankly, Indiana was, you know, almost scores there at the end to make it a tie game and go into overtime. So the second they've gone on the road and played anybody, they've looked pretty marginal. It was interesting watching the...
Yeah.
Yeah, they're young.
They're pretty young.
I don't know. Like, I was good. You can't do this, because in reality, because the runs happen, but, you know, you take the longest run from each of those games out by Jawar, and he's averaging, like, 3.5 or 5 yards, you know, per carry. So it's not... I don't know. Part of me is, like, kind of like... Are the stats juiced a little bit right now based on the competition they've played? Like, I was watching the Indiana game just during lunch here, right? I mean, they were just throwing some deep balls that were... It just doesn't look that complicated to me. And so, like, I think Wake Forest slow mesh offense is more complicated for us than what we're about to see. I'm curious to see if Tony Gibson will take stuff that we've seen from that type of game plan where we know we are going to get stressed vertically by wide receivers. I don't know.
To me, let me interrupt you here. To me, it's a little misleading. I think their offense is explosive, right? They've had some big plays, and they just put up a boatload of points on BC last week. I wonder how much of that BC hangover from Florida State impacted that. You know, they were winning that game, and they gave up a, 31-point comeback or some nonsense like that in the second half. Like it,
we're talking that about BC real. That barely beat Holy Cross, though, Evan.
Right, yeah. So, like, it's a bad BC team that punched over its weight against Florida State and then came back to reality against Louisville, and they were, you know, had a hangover game. I don't expect Jack Plummer to come into Carter Finley and go 18 for 21 for 380 again and 5 touchdowns like he did against BC. Like, I don't think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
So, you know, additionally, Louisville's got Notre Dame next week. I guarantee they're more worried about Notre Dame than they are us. Even if they're, you know, trying to coach against that, that's typically how that works. Like, oh, we got Notre Dame in front of us. Let's do this. So, I think it's if you look at it on paper, you're like, damn, this running back's averaging nearly 10 yards a rush. And, like, that's not good. And then this, you know, they're putting up video game point numbers. But the reality is, I don't, you know, they're coming on the road. I don't think these things are going to play out as easy as it looks for Louisville.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been impressed by their defense just from the quick, you know, again, I didn't get to look much. I avoided the Murray State game because I didn't think that was going to be useful. I watched a little bit of the Georgia Tech game that first night. You know, I just think it's a game where, yeah, home field could be a big, big factor here. Hopefully the crowd's in it. You know, it's tough to, it kind of reminds me of like last year where we were like, well, are people going to start bailing on this team? And then it was parent weekend or whatever it is. I can't remember what game it was, but it was basically a sellout and people were still there and still heavily involved. So I think the crowd's going to be good. Blackout should be a factor. It's a Friday night. So, you know, people are going to hopefully stay there and not worry about, you know, like a Thursday night game. I always worry like, oh, are people going to show out hard? If it's a, you know, a weeknight, but I don't know. Jack Plummer was like 13 of 20 something against Indiana. Like, I just, to your point, right? I think BC might be a little bit more of an aberration game. I think the Georgia Tech and Indiana performances are more in line. And I think it just really comes down to, is this team going to start clicking better on offense? You know, I mean, if we have to listen to what Dave said in his press conference this week and all the players, it's all been about fundamentals and letdowns. Frankly, it's just been the offensive line, it seems like, that are just letting free runners at Brennan that are impacting things more than anything. So can we clean that up being at home? And if so, I think we're gonna put points up. And so, I don't know, man. I kind of feel like we're winning this game, which is a weird feeling after last Friday, but it just feels like it sets up better for us. But I think it does. I guess the only hesitation I have is safety and just, you know, injury depth in general right now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think, and it's funny, I was on Alex's podcast, the Lotcast, last night, and they were talking about it. You know, it's a rebuilding year, and I pushed back like, I think this team's got too much talent at most and experience at most positions. You know, safety's a concern with the injuries, and wide receivers a concern with the talent. But outside of that, this team's got a lot of guys that played a lot of football. And
yeah,
to me, it's not a talent thing. It's more of, at some point, does this all come together? Because we've seen pieces of it where, you know, they've gone tempo and the offense has been able to do what they want, or they've done certain things that have let the offense move and come together. At some point, this should come together, right? I think the coaches have to put this together. Dave mentioned it, even though he backtracked, which I didn't like. He mentioned it after the game where he said, we need to simplify things and do what we're good at and not, you know, try so many things that we're not good at, so to speak. And then he backtracked. Oh, we did okay. We just need to block it better, which I thought was a little bit more coach speak, in my opinion. But I think it comes together at some point, and it would be a great time for that to come together. Well, I'm kind of with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, Well, hold on. Okay, we're going to come to that backtrack comment in a second. But if this is the rebuild year, then what's next year? Because you're losing a bunch of players on defense again next year, right? I don't know if I don't doubt Rosner's going to be back, right? Yeah. Like there's a, I think next year's the rebuild year unless we go heavy in the portal, which I think is still needed. But okay, so that's an interesting thought there. When you go back and just watch the game from last week, like it just feels like what Dave was saying when he was backtracking in that press conference was basically like, well, we screwed up so many times, one person on the offensive line just for no reason, not doing his job, doing something really weird, that one play, and it allowed them to go get a free shot at Brennan. So I think what he was basically saying is like, well, I'm watching from the sideline and I'm seeing a screw up. I'm thinking it's too many plays, too much complexity. Then he goes back and looks at the film and goes, oh, well, we probably would have made that play if this guy just actually doesn't let the nose tackle run free at the quarterback. So, you know, so I give him kudos on coming back and saying, hold on, like, we just got to clean some of this stuff up. I just still am frustrated with wide receiver rotations. He didn't really... The only thing he said there was he basically compared Keon Lassane to Julian Gray, and I just felt like that was just a questionable comparison, but I don't know. I really hope that this is the game where Keon Lassane just explodes and we all say, okay, fine, great.
It's almost like Dave was a fan, like all of us watching the game, like, damn, that sucked. Why did we do this? Or why are we doing that? And then comes back, yeah, and like, well, I watched the all 22, which the rest of us don't have, and I saw X, Y, and Z. Like, well, his reaction was very much like, yeah, I that feels real to me. I can feel that. And then he backtracked on it.
It also came across as Robert and I saying, hey, shut the hell up.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Doesn't surprise me too much. I don't know. I think everything... I'm not as down on... you know... pretty much everything as some people are. Like, there was a conversation today about, you know, if we're an average team, are we a good average team or a bad average team? And I tend to think we're more of a better average team. I think there's room to grow and they need to put the pieces together. I think the offense needs to figure out the flow. Everything, we've talked about this before, everything seems like a grind. There's no rhythm or, you know, what are they really doing well? We know what they're going to do. Like, we don't have any of that. And I think at some point that's got to come together. And now maybe that's me being optimistic, but it just feels like there's enough talent in some positions that, and I'm going to assume that the coaches are self-aware to a point where they're like, okay, maybe this Keon Lassane thing isn't working, and I'm picking on Keon Lassane, but maybe it's, you know, maybe we need to get more to Michael Allen or whatever it may be, and maybe more Juice Vereen and less Trent Penix and let him make the mistakes. I think at some point the coaches have to come to that realization. Maybe not, but that's kind of my optimism lies there, that they have enough pieces that they will put it together.
I would say after 10 other seasons with Doran, they tend to... No. I was just going to say they tend to wait until the bye week to do their quote-unquote self-scouting and do those changes. So... you know, in reality, that kind of perspective probably isn't going to be gained until after Marshall, I guess. After Duke. Is it Duke or Marshall? I can't remember if our bye is after Marshall or after Duke. But, that's curious. I don't expect that kind of change. In the end, I just think the problem with the offense in particular right now is... you're playing a lot of young guys. You've got Cooper covering for McMahon, which, I don't know. I was just listening to a podcast earlier today, I was listening to Joe Chiglio, and he was like, well, McMahon is a for sure, surefire NFL player. And I was like, I still don't know where this narrative has come from. I don't see that either. Yet. you know, I know he supposedly got some good grade from a scout last season, but I don't know. I just, unfortunately, McMahon, I think, should have been playing center his whole career, and so he's just, it's hard for me to wipe out the three other seasons that I've seen. But anyway, so you got Cooper, who came in and played versus VMI, and they gave him, like, a super high grade. But if you go back and watch the VMI game, like, they barely ever blitzed. They were just dropping back the whole time. So that wasn't probably a good indicator. Then he got in and faced UVA, which has two really good interior defensive tackles, and there were all sorts of problems. So I expect that to be better this week. But, you know, you're playing Keon, you're playing Vereen. We saw some questionable plays from Vereen last game, you know, that fired up an eye and others. So it's like, I get why it's like two steps forward, one step back a lot of times on these drives. And then occasionally then everything comes together and you're like, oh, there it is. Like, that's how it was. All the scoring drives versus UVA, I was like, this team looks like it's in perfectly good control. So I think that will improve as the year goes on. I just think the key this game is just don't let them get that massive explosive that you've let up every single game. God forbid, don't let them get two. Right. You know, I'm just going to be curious to see who's back there at safety. I'm also going to be curious to see who's the third string running back. Because I don't expect Raphael to be back this week based on how Doran was in that press conference. I think he just said day to day or something like that, or TBD, basically. So there's been some chatter that they're cross training someone at running back right now and who that should be. I actually think that should be maybe Keon, you know, that might be a better fit for him. It's not like I'm trying to get him off the field. I'm just, my whole thing with Keon Lazane is he should be a slot receiver or a running back. He does not look like an outside receiver. I don't think that's fair to him. Anyways, so I'm curious to see what happens there with those personnel decisions.
I can't remember a year where we've had a consistent narrative around one guy so much. Right, outside of maybe a quarterback, Bailey Hockman or something like that, but like everybody, not just us, every podcast out there is talking about the misuse of Keon Lazane and overuse of Keon Lazane and underuse of some of the other guys. Like it's wild to me, right? I mean, if you listen, IPS had their pod talked about it, Pac Pride and Michael Clark mentions it all the time. Like, why is he an outside guy? Why are they running him out there so many times? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's an interesting narrative to me. And, yeah, moving to running back, I'm in.
It's just something your eye just latches onto. When you see it in person, when you see it on the game film, you're just like, hold on a second. What is this guy doing?
And somebody pointed out in the pod chat today, and it also applies to another guy, but he mentioned Terrell Timmons, one of his few routes that he ran, how he broke off and got separation with his guy. And, you know, Concepcion does the same thing. He runs good routes and gets separation, and what do you know? It turns into 116 yards in the last game. I have not seen Keon Lazane ever do that. Never. And it's weird to me that they keep trying to make it a thing. So, I don't know.
I mean, if you go back and look at his big plays, right? Like, this year, it was a sideline route versus Notre Dame for, like, kind of like a diving catch, if I remember correctly. And then I have to go back to last year, like, Wake Forest. He had, maybe it was like a seam or like a post that he caught over the middle, and then maybe he scored on the next play as well. So, it's just, I haven't seen this big explosive play that everyone's talking about. And like you said, right? I mean, I think if you put them side by side, I'm pretty sure KC runs a faster 40, for example.
Oh, sure.
Is obviously quicker, right? And so when he catches over the middle, he can immediately transition so quickly into a runner, and it makes a big difference. So, again, it's just they obviously like Keon, and they've always been trying to figure out a way to put him on the field. It's just, I just think it's really weird to be like, I'm going to go force him at X. You know, it just doesn't seem fair to him, really. I mean, it's like, I'm sure he feels the burden. I'm sure he feels the pressure. Like, these guys aren't idiots. They see people chirping on Twitter and on the message boards, and I'm sure someone's told them there's a podcast talking shit about them.
All of them. Everybody. Like, everybody.
So, I mean, maybe that will inspire some greatness. I don't know. I know those coaches listen. I don't know why. I don't think they shouldn't have the time to listen to us, but they do. I don't know.
All right.
I want to get off Keon. We wrote him.
I know. I didn't mean to bring him back. We were talking about the running backs, and it came back to him. I would move him.
Well,
there
he should be the running back.
Yeah, I know. We saw him on a few run plays. Like, oh, he looks pretty good at running back. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who the third string running back is there. I would assume DeMarcus Jones, but who knows?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Louisville? We've got a butt ton of questions that I want to get to and some things.
Yeah, I just, I'm going to be curious to see what we do. I guess what I'm kind of thinking back on is, are we going to sit back in coverage and try to keep everything in front of us because we're concerned about these explosives? Or are we just going to go attack Plummer because I'm just not impressed by him. All I saw in the last couple games is that he scrambles around a little bit and he just hurls up a deep ball. And then a lot of time it just looked like the safety blew it or the cornerback blew it. So it's just going to be how they – like, I listened to Jeff Brohm's presser to kick off the week, and he kept saying over and over and over again about how aggressive Tony Gibson's defense is. Aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. He was just saying it like three or four times, like in a row. And I was just like, okay, well, that sounds like if we're listening, maybe we use that tendency to our advantage and come out and flip the script, right? So I'll just be curious to see. I've never seen Tony walk away from an opportunity to be aggressive, but just gonna be really curious to see, like, first quarter how we play things.
All right, so this is we're going to be all over the place because these questions are all over the place, but I got to play this clip. So I'm watching this YouTube golf channel, Bob Does Sports. Super entertaining. They're terrible golfers, but they're playing a pro-am with this LPGA girl who ended up going to Alabama, and she's talking about her being recruited as a woman golfer to Alabama. I'm going to play this, y'all. This clip here.
Golf at Alabama. I was getting recruited. Friday night, we're on our way to the gymnastics meet. My coach who I had was like, hey, we're going to walk through this building. And this guy walks out. He's like, hey, Emma, I'm Cedric. And I was like, who's Cedric? Come to find out that was Nick Saban's personal assistant. 2 seconds later, Nick Saban comes out and he's like, Emma Talley, Cole County High School, and names everything I've ever done in my life. And we walk into his office. He's like, do you want to close the door or me? He had the remote that closes the door. I was like, you can. And we sat on the couch. He chit-chatted, asked me about my story with golf. And then he was like, looked me straight in the face and goes, we build champions here. Do you want to be a champion or not? And I was like, yes, sir.
The Alabama way.
Like, Nick Saban's getting involved in recruiting Alabama women's golf.
My man.
I mean, it's all about recruiting. Well, and he knows it. It's for everywhere. It's the same thing. I mean, that's impressive to me, right? That he can take the time to, participate in that and know her resume that well, and that's impressive.
Wasn't there a video a year or two ago of him golfing with some of his players? And, they're just, chunking off the tee, and he's, trying to give them advice. I gotta go find it. It's pretty funny.
I don't remember.
He just proceeds to immediately chunk it again.
I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no. Could you imagine if they did that for, Dave Doran? He'd be like, we build 8-9 win champions.
Tough together and in the bunker. Yeah, something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's so awesome.
Some of the questions we got, I'm going to get to them now. But I just wanted to play that clip. I heard that last night. I was like, oh, I got a clip. That's awesome. Bob Does Sports is fantastic, by the way, if you haven't followed or watched their stuff. It's hilarious. After last week's UVA game, many are diagnosing State with a talent deficit. While it's likely due to several factors, what's the main cause of talent deficit? My answer is going to be not being Nick Saban and recruiting like that. it's clearly, we've talked about this before. We talked about last week or Monday, whenever it was, and you went through all the, skill position guys that we've missed on over the last, 5 years. And now other podcasts and media outlets are picking up on that. I think it's a clear there's a clear differential there between how we've developed and identified talent on the defensive side, and then how we've done the same on the offensive side and missed so many times. So, you know, most people are going to lay that at the hands of Dave, but that's probably going to lay at the hands of his assistants to me. And I think that's where that comes. They've just missed so many times on offense, from the offensive line to the skill position players. Defense doesn't seem to have that, you know, with Charlie Wiles and DeForest and Mitchell. Those guys seem to identify the guys they want and the guys they like that'll fit what they're trying to do. And I just think it's offensively. I just think they've missed so many times.
Yeah, I think it's miss. It's, you know, these guys, actually, most of them were, well, the 2018, 2019 guys, most of them were brought in by McDonald before he was let go. So I would say there's part that, the other part is just, I don't know. I mean, I just don't think Joker Phillips has been developing our wide receivers very well, if you want my honest opinion. I think I think Thayer Thomas and Emeka Emezi were kind of, they made themselves more than it felt like they were coached and developed. And Carter, you know, you saw those flashes, but you never saw it become truly consistent. And I would say that's a sign that coaching isn't working. So I don't know, man. I'm like so miffed about the Joker Phillips thing. I just,
I think he goes back even farther. Like, if you look at the offensive line, we've talked about it for years, Ledford and his lack of recruiting. He coached him up. He absolutely coached him up, but he didn't recruit him. And then Garrison, you know, a lot of people put Icky on Garrison's resume, but Icky's Icky. Icky's going to be good regardless. And I think Garrison is getting a lot of grief at Ole Miss right now because they're struggling too. And we missed on a bunch of O-line guys under him. It's too early to evaluate 2J, but, you know, if you were going back and looking at, again, the misses on offense, it's pretty clear. It's, you know, the skill positions, the line coaches just haven't gotten it done. Really disappointing.
Yeah. Well, I would say, yeah. So, there's that. And then again, I think just also like transfers has just been a disappointment relatively recently, right? And so, again, I think not the factor, it's two factors. It's you've got these guys and they haven't developed. The second factor is they're still here, they're taking up scholarships, and we aren't able to use those scholarships on either an offensive lineman, a wide receiver, a running back, whatever, right? Like, if we could go do the spring over again, knowing Jordan Houston's leaving, and just go get another offensive lineman, I wouldn't be worrying about the other running backs in the room right now. I'd be less concerned. It's just stuff like that where we've held on to certain guys. I just don't quite know why. Like, I mean, I just think sometimes you have to say, like, hey, listen, like, yep, we gave you a 4-year scholarship. Appreciate the hard work you're doing, but you're not going to make it at this level, and we need to go in a different direction, and we'll help you find a place to go be. And if you don't want to do that, then we're going to find a way to medical you. Like,
yeah,
I hate to say it, but like that's the game you have to kind of play, because 2 or 3 guys would have made a huge difference for this team, in my opinion, right? Like another lineman, another wide receiver, another whatever you want. Like, I don't know. I just think it's really been hard on us for the last few years because we've got so many guys that were kind of project type guys, but had all this upside, and then we're just never developing them. So they're just sitting there. I don't want to call them dead weight. They're just undeveloped, unmined talent.
Trent Penix experiment.
I'm waiting. This is the week. Hold on, can I just say, I do feel like this is the week. This is the week Penix is going to pop off. Like, Louisville's defense and him, you know, he's getting more run. I got a feeling. This is it. 3 touches at least.
Okay. You keep That's popping about off. That. Three touches. If we lose and don't look confident again this week, who is Dave going to blame that's not Keon Lassane? fans. Somehow it's going to be the fans' fault.
Yeah. He's already blamed the fundamentals.
Pass outs. Yeah.
Not complimentary football. Oh, and he can't blame the rain. Is it going to rain? I was dying when he said, oh, you know, and we were playing in the rain. It's like, well, so was the other team. You can't ever use playing in the rain as an excuse.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he could blame the refs. I don't know. Yeah that's going to be funny.
Penn State is simulating Northwestern with no music.
Oh, my God. That was brutal.
That's pretty funny. What do away teams play to get ready for NC State?
That's a Wolfpack. First down! Remember when Depp was the one he was doing that?
Yeah. I would say, I'm going to steal Mac's answer in the pod chat, and it's the reverb wagon wheel on volume 12, just cranked up.
Oh, they, poor speakers. They don't know that new sound system, though.
That's true. New sound system. Let me go. There's a huge list of questions here.
No, actually, for real. I mean, everyone does say our home environment is rowdy. It's like been pretty consistent. So
yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm sure they just pipe in the noise.
It's an advantage. Yeah.
I just couldn't believe you said that they just turned the
volume off.
This is a long
question here, and it's in response to the last pod, but I wanted to address it.
Okay.
Not to beat this dead horse, but we're going to do it anyway. Why is MJ not allowed to grow and progress against what Brennan Armstrong already is? His development is stunted and I expect him to transfer. The point Will made on the recruiting contradicts himself with the recruiting rankings. Don't matter in August, but the higher-rated freshmen are needing the snaps and producing. I think there's a huge problem with State's development. You look at the players you said, Person, Bam, Michael Crowell, Porter Rooks, and more with offers from UGA, Alabama, Michigan, and Clemson. None of them hit or developed to all ACC producers, draft prospects, etc. Some of that is scheme, development, and setting them up for success. Usually one would bust, one would underproduce like Person, and the rest would be good producers. Same with MJ. Huge offer list, but we act like he is developmental. Other schools play their dudes. It's kind of what we were just talking about. The development is really missed on the offensive side, both in the recruiting and actual development.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the contradiction is here. Hold on. Let me just take this like line by line. Why is MJ not allowed to grow and progress against what BA already has? If MJ was ready, they'd be playing MJ. I don't think... Like, why would they be beholden... I think you want to. I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, I said it last week. I don't think Brennan Armstrong has lost us a game. Like,
what was it? We've only lost one game.
We've lost one. It was against Notre Dame, and watching that game back, I wasn't like, I'm going to blame Brennan.
He's not doing the things. He's not putting us in the best chance to succeed. I think it's clear what's happening.
I don't think we're putting him in the best chance to succeed.
Whatever. Fair. I think what's happening is his floor is higher than MJ's because MJ does have to learn. He's going to see some defensive fronts he's not seen before and, you know, might make some mistakes. So I think they're rolling with Armstrong's floor gives us a chance to get X number of wins, and it's safer, and we know how conservative the staff has been historically. So I think that's why he's playing, right? He gives you a chance to be more consistent. I think he's going to be more consistent. His ceiling's going to knock me as high as MJ's. We know what Armstrong is at this point. I don't think he is 2021 Brennan Armstrong. I think that was an aberration. So we kind of know where his ceiling is. I think everybody agrees MJ's ceiling is probably higher, but the floor is lower. And then if you're conservative, you're going to play the guy with the higher floor. And I don't know. Like, I'm moving my hands all around, and nobody can see that. But I just kind of think that's kind of where we are. I think they're playing Brennan because he gives you the safer floor.
I think he knows the scheme, and
I think frankly, so too. But more, he makes so many mistakes with reads and just
I know. But he's also more mobile than he's clearly. I mean, I don't think it's arguable. He's more mobile than MJ is, and that mobility on the ground is what is making a lot of drives continue. So, like, no one's talking about it. They may want a redshirt MJ because he's coming off of a knee injury. It's a new offense, and they, quite frankly, like, don't want to expose him to this bad offensive line if he's not going to be able to scramble his way effectively out of things the way that Brennan does. I think that's a big factor. And I think the other factor is you brought in Brennan. You probably want to make it a signal to future transfer quarterbacks that we're going to bring you in. We're not going to just bench you when you lose to a top 10 team and then, you know, manage to just kind of grow through it. And again, I still think we're kind of at like this weird, you know, you crushed my dreams last week, earlier this week when you said that they also played Syracuse at Purdue. But I think it's just very weird. There's a lot of known knowledge on this team right now with the teams we've played. So I don't know. I just think, yeah, he's missed some passes. But if you go back and look at the tape, he's missing a lot of passes because dudes are all up in his grill because Cooper passes the wrong guy and no one picks it up, or, you know, Carter or Eason or whomever. Yeah. So I just feel like those guys just hold those blocks for a quarter of a second longer against UVA, and that game gets taken care of pretty fast. So it just hasn't been smooth operating there. I'm going to jump to another part of the question where they said, I think there's a huge problem with State's development. You look at the players, and you said Person, Bam, Crowell, Rooks, and more with these offers, and none of them have hit. Well, first off, hold on. Person and Bam were perfectly fine ACC running backs for us, and they
were solid.
Both played through a lot. They played through a lot of injuries, but they were relatively consistent over their time period. So I don't consider them misses. I said they were solid contributors. So I would take a Person in a Bam all the time at running back. The problem is that wide receiver, for example, the other two listed here, Crowell and Rooks. Well, Crowell has just been non-existent. Part of that was injury, but he's also been moved to running back, which is a strange place for him. And, you know, Rooks flashed and then went away. And again, who knows what led to that? Maybe it's the wide receiver coaching. Maybe it's just because Thayer Thomas was just soaking all those reps. But my thing is get the talent here and then play the talent and develop the talent. I don't see what the point is of bringing in an Ant Smith back in 2019 or whatever it was and then letting him run, you know, the same route over and over and over again, but having a quarterback who's terrible at deep ball passing overthrow him, underthrow him, and then him drop one or two, then he'll catch one for a touchdown, and then be like, well, this guy can't play. We can't play him. It's the hardest route to catch. It's the hardest ball to throw. Like, I'm surprised at the people that are like, well, Ant Smith just isn't good enough. It's like, you gave him so few opportunities and then asked him to make the hardest catches in the game. Okay, I'm surprised he's got a lower number than others.
Let me ask you this. If we had Notre Dame's offensive line and Brennan Armstrong had a clean pocket, does he pick teams apart?
I think his numbers would be infinitely better.
I'm not sure about that.
Oh, my God. This, first off, if we had that offensive line, we'd actually be good at running the ball.
Well, like, that's why I meant pass. I'm just isolating it to passing. I get the running part. I still think makes the same mistakes.
I mean, he
mistakes.
Makes really good throws at times. Like, yeah, I get it. He occasionally makes terrible skips throws one.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Sure, but like, I don't think his throws are as bad. If you just look at the stats and you're like, 50%, but then you go back and look at the ones he missed on, and almost all of them, someone's blown their assignment and he's getting run up on by a defender. It's just not surprising to me. So, like, yeah, if you give him a very, very good offensive line, I do think he would do a lot better. He'd definitely be like a mid-60s percent thrower, like, which is all you really need to be, 63, 65%. Like, no one, I wouldn't care. Plus, behind that kind of line, his ability to scramble as well would be magnified. So I don't know. It's funny you say that because I've been thinking all week, like, Jesus, why can't we just get these Catholic linemen that seem to be like invincible for certain schools, like in the Midwest? I would just love to get these guys. I don't know. Everyone's supposedly excited about the freshman/redshirt freshman class of offensive linemen we have. So maybe it'll be a moot point soon.
Maybe. Hope so.
Hold on. Isn't there another part of this question?
Why would a highly ranked QB come to state? I mean, that's pretty clear. You can sell the history there. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Plus, you're constantly trying to win games. I don't know.
Playing time, too. Right? Yeah. I mean, assuming. Whatever. Aside from Ledford and Drink, can you point to any solid development from offensive side? That's the funny thing. I don't think Ledford developed anybody. I think he coached him up. And
I would give Yurimovich the credit for the guys that Ledford got to coach.
Right. Coach U, I thought, did a better job there. I thought Ledford brought them together and they performed well, but Yurimovich was the one that brought in the talent and got them to that position.
Yeah, I think Ledford was a good motivator and a good coach. I don't think he was a good talent evaluator at all.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear.
All the guys he recruited, basically all of them, were out within like several years.
Right. Why do schools I mentioned with less talent in various ways, like Kansas State, Kansas, Oregon State, Washington State, somehow not make excuses with less talent, injuries, schedule, and manufacture offense? So, I we talked about this last pod, and this is a response to that question. I think we don't pay that close attention to the narratives that those people are talking about, right? I'm not following the Kansas State podcast or whatever. I do say that Kansas, I don't want to call him Colwicky. I can't forget the Kansas offensive coordinator's name. He's done a fantastic job. Colwicky's the NASCAR guy. But all of those guys have schemes that they are coaching to and developing to. And it's impressive, and that's been my point and our point. You and I both said the same thing for the longest time, is why can these chump schools do it and why can't we do it? Right? Why are we such grinding all the time? That's still the part that I don't understand. I think there's a huge disconnect there, and maybe it's better. They're better at evaluating talent and bringing in the talent they need on that side of the ball. That's kind of the only common denominator that I can think of. You know, is they are coaching to their schemes better. I don't think our scheme is the problem. I think our talent and our ability to get the talent to do what we want within that scheme is clearly different than everybody else. Honestly, the more I think about it, and you might disagree here, but each one of those schools has a better quarterback.
Well, I don't know about that.
100%. Kansas State has Will Howard. Kansas has Daniels. Oregon State has DJU. And Washington State has Heisman contender Cam Ward. If you miss on a quarterback, or if you have an average quarterback, I think your offense is going to be average. If you have an elite quarterback...
Cam Ward's a Heisman candidate?
He's fantastic. Watch Washington State. He's fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, hold on. First off, these schools all bitch all the time about all the things that they don't have. The Oregon State guys or Washington State talk about how they're just like a little old town in the middle of nowhere. So that's a factor. Two, they play, at least half those teams play in the Pac-12, which is like a nut. Like, that's good this year, but all those other years hasn't been very good. And teams in the Big 12, don't come at me. I'm not impressed by Big 12 teams either. So I think if you watch those teams or if you were on their message boards, they'd be complaining and making up excuses themselves all these other years. Like,
probably. Everybody's looking at
their own
team.
Things are coming together a little bit for them. Yeah. I would just say I'd like to wait until things kind of like play out with some of those situations. But Kansas State has been really consistent all those years. I mean, Kansas State is like JUCO heaven out there. So that's kind of set a floor as far as kind of like the level of experience bodies that they've got playing for them. I think that's just you know, that kind of protected them a lot. And they literally were like the pipeline of JUCO.
Sure, but Klieman came in with a history of winning, and he's doing that here at Kansas State.
They already had that under Bill, whatever his name was.
As soon as that guy left, anybody who replaced him tanked, and they brought him back, and they finally got a guy who a winner who won at every level, and he's winning at this level. And
yeah, I think same thing with Kansas. He came in on the second end of the tenure with Bill Snyder, whoever it was. Right, yeah. Like he had rebuilt it back up again, and it was built the same exact way, and so he's taking advantage of it. So it's kind of like, I'll just kind of wait and see how things go. Like DJU back at Oregon State, I don't know, TBD, man. Washington State, TBD. Like
Washington State is good. Watch them play. They are good. Like they are a good football team. They're an exciting football team. I watched all their game last week. They are good. And Kansas and Cam Ward's really good. Like Washington State's legit. The Apple Cup is going to be one of the best games of the year. Washington's legit and Washington State's legit. 100%.
Yeah, well, like when are they playing? Because by then, who knows? Cam Ward could be dead.
It's true.
From injury, I mean. So, like, I'm kind of just like, I just take everything for the first, like, few weeks. It's just like, let's just see, like, what things look like in week six or so. That's when I take my pulse.
But it's, like, Kansas has come out of nowhere, and they've done it multiple years in a row from a team that's been a dumpster. Leipold and the offensive coordinator's name, who I cannot remember, but it's something like Colwicky.
Yeah, I mean, good scheme.
Doing a fantastic job.
Good scheme. Getting guys, transfers, things like that, right? Like, sometimes just everything comes together and it works. I don't know. I think it's also easy to sit here and complain and find excuses or not excuses when you've got the same guy for 11 years and you can point to so many different data points at that point as well.
Why do you all think portal players that would elevate play of a team come when you are competing against the rest of the market? Seems to play out similar to high school recruiting. Dave got some good ones like Vi, Finley, and Jacoby. It's playing time and money at this point. If you have the money, which State has the money, and you have the playing time, which we should have the playing time, if those guys play, State can compete in the portal market. Why they didn't go after running backs or offensive line more than Jaramillo is still kind of a head scratcher to me.
I mean, it was just numbers. Like they they've got money. Like everyone, they can play in the portal. I'm not worried about it. Like, are they gonna go spend $150,000 or $200,000 on somebody? Probably not. Like, they'd rather do that with somebody they know that they've got on their team holding them back. So yeah, I'm not worried about playing that space.
I'm not either. This speaks to your point earlier. Last point, if Anai and State can't overcome UConn and UVA because of familiarity, then what's going to change with slightly better competition in conference play? So would it be easier if we played Washington State, Oregon State, BYU? If the coaching staff can't overcome familiarity, then they shouldn't coach because every season in conference play there will be familiarity. Yeah, I agree. I think that was a bad analogy by Will or a bad point by Will. But
no, I don't think it's a bad point. I think you guys are idiots. It's when you've got a team, when you play the same team for 3 years, you think, okay, hey, I'm going to play Notre Dame. At least they're not always like reading up on NC State personnel and scheme. Oh, what's that? They played the new scheme we just brought in 3 years out of the last 4 years. Yeah, I think that's an advantage for them. And I think it's definitely an advantage for other teams to know what's coming. Remember when Beck came and Wake Forest said, what the fuck, when we showed up and ran for like 300 yards over them? That's because they had no idea what was coming. It's definitely an advantage to know a scheme and know the personnel. You guys are fools if you think otherwise.
It turns out that Wake Forest defensive line was terrible today, Evan.
What'd you say?
Wake Forest defensive line was terrible. Like that.
It was. But,
and we exposed them week one, and we got exposed every other game after that where we couldn't run for 100 yards. So that was a misnomer. I don't think that had anything to do with skill. I thought that had to do with a terrible matchup for Wake Forest.
I think they had no idea what was happening, and Bailey Hockman threw a beautiful pick six to them to keep it close.
I also see what you're saying. in wide receiver height on the outside, but OU and several good offensive have had average height at receiver that kills it outside in the Z or X position. If you can get open and catch, that's all that matters. I agree. I think you bring it back to Louisville. Their two best wide receivers are under 6 feet. Jamari Thrash is, listed at 6 feet, but he's not. And he is electric. I think in college you can get away with not having the big outside wide receivers, but you have to have your inside guys and you have to have your other guys get separation and you have to play them. I mean, that Washington kid for UVA, Malik Washington, number 4, was all over the field. They used him all over the place, and they got him the ball. And he's not big, but he got separation. And that's kind of what I think we all expected from Julian Gray and, you know, Timmons and maybe now KC. You expect to see some of that, and that's the disconnect when we're not seeing. In my opinion, I think that's more important. I think in college, the height of the wide receiver doesn't matter as much if you're not just playing jump ball offense like we used to, or fades in the end zone kind of deal. If you start looking ahead to Charlotte based off schedule, is Louisville a team with one of the easiest paths to Charlotte? Yeah, Louisville's schedule this year has just been easy. I think if they can make it through Friday, I think they do have a really good chance to make Charlotte. I'm not sure if you've seen the Louisville football schedule or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people had them as like a dark horse candidate preseason. It wasn't because they expected them to be great. It's just they didn't expect them to have any challenges.
Here's the rest of their schedule. Notre Dame, a non-ACC game. At Pitt, Duke at home, Virginia Tech at home, Virginia at home, at Miami, and then Kentucky. So basically they have us and at Miami left that are probably going to challenge them in the ACC. I mean, Duke, I guess, yeah, maybe, but I think Duke got them at home. That's pretty good for them. And Pitt, I think, stinks. So, yeah, they have pretty much the easiest schedule in the ACC. I wouldn't be surprised if they win Friday and that they are in Charlotte. Yeah.
Yeah, State needs to do everyone a favor and start ruining people's days so we can get some really complicated tiebreakers.
Yes. Okay. Unstate related, do you have anything else about the game or the pack or Louisville?
No, I'm just looking forward to it. These Friday night games are so weird because then, like, Saturday, you're kind of like, what do I do with my hands? Like the Ricky Bobby thing, because you have all this free time or free emotional energy. So I don't know. I think we're going to win this game. I think it's just going to come together, and it's going to be close. But everyone, you know, comes back from their seats or from their tailgating in time from halftime, and, you know, Dave can't complain about it, and so he goes, I guess I'll just try to win the game instead, and does that.
They'll want to see the glow-in-the-dark uniform, so get back in your seats.
Yeah, and hopefully the halftime show will be kind of fun with the lights, and then at nighttime, right, and then plus that effect. So, yeah, I think... I think it's gonna be a cool environment tomorrow.
All right, random question. What's the first thing you would show to a pilgrim to scare them? That's a good question.
I have no idea. Is this a joke or is this a question?
It's a question. I'd say social media. Who's president? Or the last, like, 5 presidents?
Oh, geez. I would just give them a box of blankets and not tell them where it's from. And
an Uzi.
Oh, my gosh.
Imagine busting out an Uzi on a pilgrim. That would be wild.
I don't feel like that was the purpose of this question.
I don't either, but that would be scary. What's your favorite spice?
Cumin.
Old Spice?
Cumin. Oh my god.
Cumin?
Yeah, cumin.
Oh, I mean, garlic. Garlic's gotta be the answer.
That's not a spice, bud.
Yes, it is.
You talking about garlic powder?
Well, garlic. I guess was it you can consider an herb? Herbs and spices. Yeah. I put them all in one.
I take my spices down more like to the seed level, you know, kind of ground stuff.
Okay. All right. That's enough of this podcast. I don't want to hear about Will's seed levels.
Yeah. Well, you took so long during lunch for us to start this podcast that now I'm getting asked questions at work, and so you got me distracted.
Yeah, gotta go anyway. As always, thanks for listening. Wear black. It's a blackout. Do all the things you're supposed to be doing, and as always, go Pack.
Same. Go Pack.
Emotional damage.
You want some therapy?
Hey guys, pod sponsor Roback wanted me to let you know about their new Q-Zip. It is badass. It's called the North State Q-Zip. It's got NC State red, a little black collar on the inside, and a little shadow design, North Carolina, on it as a little pattern. It is sharp. Y'all should check it out. Remember, you can use code red and white at roback.com to get 20% off your first order. If it's not your first order, just use a different email address or, you know, the old Gmail hack, but putting the plus after your name. So your email plus whatever at Gmail, and it will create a new email address for you. But check it out. It's really slick. It's really good looking. I expect a lot of y'all will rock that to the NC State games, but not the blackout game this week. So check it out. Roback.com, red, white for 20% off. Thanks for listening.